O God, may the words of my mouth and the meditations of all our hearts be acceptable in your sight, for you are our rock and our redeemer. Amen.
Well, I've been out of town for a couple of weeks. I went to Iowa to visit some friends there, and then I spent this past week in Phoenix with a group of my pastor colleagues. We've been going out there every January for the past 4 years, and when we go out there, we're all business. You know, they lock us up in this windowless conference room, and they bring in these teachers who instruct us throughout the week. And we thought, we've been doing this for 4 years, and we've been getting so close to the Grand Canyon, we should actually go this time. So we took a few days at the end of this, and we drove up to the Grand Canyon. Some people told me to lower my expectations about the Grand Canyon. They said it wasn't that exciting. But I don't know what those people were thinking. The Grand Canyon is amazing. I knew it was supposed to be big, but I was seriously expecting something smaller. Oh, it's just an especially large river gorge, I thought. Hardly so. When you're standing at the rim of the Grand Canyon, you can barely see the Colorado River at the bottom. In fact, in most places, you can't see the Colorado River at all. It's 225 miles long. And from one rim to the other, it's as wide as 18 miles. That's like the distance from here to the airport. It's truly breathtaking. John Wesley Powell, who explored the canyons of the Colorado River after he lost an arm in the Civil War, wrote that he could hardly think of any natural feature comparable in scale. If you turned upside down the Blue Ridge Mountains, Powell wrote, it would not fill the hole in the ground. I had a hard time comprehending the scale, too. I was surprised that we were at such a high altitude. It's at like 9,000 feet when you're standing at the rim, which is high enough that it can be hard to get a breath of air after a strenuous hike. There was snow on the ground, about 3 inches. And, you know, at the bottom of the canyon, the weather can be very different. It never snows down there. It doesn't rain down there very much either. It's a desert down there. It's very hot and dry. And apparently many people underestimate the changes in climate between the top and bottom when they venture out on a hike. So when I arrived at the rim, I was immediately determined to hike down to the Colorado River. It's only 13 miles, I said. But my friends, they talked me out of it. They said that my tennis shoes wouldn't fare very well on the ice. And I didn't really have a day pack to take with me. And only a small water bottle. Many people do hike the canyon, of course, but only those who are well prepared. There are, in fact, many caution signs about the South Rim, warning overconfident hikers not to make this descent cavalierly. On the wall of this food court, there's a sign declaring that the Park Service has to rescue more than 300 people a year. And you know, there was like no Park Service when I was there last week. The sign says, most hikers look like this. And then there's a picture of a white guy in his 20s with an uncanny resemblance to me. My favorite were these graphic little cards that they would hand out at all the desks. There's an illustration of a white dude who seems very physically fit. He's not wearing a shirt. He's hunched over with a back that is terribly sunburnt. He's puking up green slime. "This is Victor," the card says. Victor didn't wear a hat or proper clothing. He didn't wear sunscreen. He didn't bring enough water or electrolyte drink. Don't be like Victor. Point taken, I told my friends, and we just took a leisurely hike along the top of the rim. I'll go back one day and hike down to the river. Well, the baptism of Jesus takes place under less dramatic circumstances. He's 30 years old, Luke tells us, and he goes down to the Jordan River where he's baptized by John, who has spent the past few years helping people get ready for the ministry of Jesus. "I baptize with water," John says, "but there is one who is coming who is more powerful than I. He will baptize with the Holy Spirit and with fire." Luke is sparse with details. He mentions only that when Jesus goes under the water, the heavens break open and a voice from above proclaims, "This is my beloved, with whom I am well pleased." That's a nice image, I think, when I read that passage. Would Luke care to elaborate? The Jordan River where Jesus is baptized is not at the bottom of a great canyon. But make no mistake, many people have strained themselves to arrive there. For the Hebrew people, the Jordan marked the boundary between the wilderness and the promised land. Their troubles were just beginning when God delivered them from captivity under Pharaoh. They spent 40 years wandering in the wilderness before they arrived on these shores. And the imagery of baptism is very powerful, I think. You know, they had crossed the Red Sea to escape from slavery, and then they crossed the Jordan to receive the promises of God. Their lives are marked by these encounters with water. These encounters with water that bracket key moments in their lives. Preceded by long journeys and stressful encounters, undoubtedly many losses along the way, the water represents for them in each case a new birth, an ending, and a beginning. The Red Sea is the ending of their oppression and the beginning of their freedom. If you know anybody who's been to prison, being released doesn't solve all your problems. In fact, it's the beginning of a whole new set of challenges. Adjustment to living life on the outside. And those things that kept you alive in your captivity may not work so well in freedom. And then the River Jordan on the far side of the wilderness, that's another key transition point. It's the ending of their wandering and the beginning of their making home. Some people don't make that adjustment very gracefully. Israel was never at war in the wilderness, you know. They didn't start fighting with each other until they had land to call their own. Baptism in the water does not promise that all will be well. Baptism in the water does not change us. Baptism in the water does not save us from danger or spare us from pain. It doesn't even make us more righteous. As they cross the Jordan River, the Hebrews are marching into the book of Joshua, the biggest moral calamity in the Old Testament. So if the water doesn't do for us any of these things, if it doesn't save us from danger or spare us from pain, why are we called down to the water in the first place? Why does John even bother with baptizing Jesus? I think it's because the water blesses us. The water blesses what already is. A voice calls down from the heaven, "This is my beloved child with whom I am well pleased." The water blesses what has been created. The water calls us good. You know, we carry these blessings of God with us when we walk, but it's still a long, long walk from the rim of the canyon down to the Colorado River. And the Hebrews were blessed by the waters of the sea, but they still had the wilderness ahead of them. And though we are blessed by the water, we are still responsible for the journey ahead. And this walk is far more comfortable when we have made ourselves ready for it. We need the right toolkit for survival. So there are a few things I think we can do to prepare ourselves for the journey. There are simple things that we call spiritual practices that remind us of God's love and strengthen us for the walk that we have ahead and the uncertainties that it will bring. What are the things that you need to take with you on this journey so that you don't wind up like Victor? Overconfident of your abilities, overzealous in your enthusiasm. Well, I think Victor needs a few things. I think Victor needs a daily habit of prayer. Maybe by himself or with his family, before meals or before bed. Maybe prayer even looks to him more like meditation or another spiritual practice. Or maybe it's praising God with music or art. But I think if you read the Hebrew story, you'll find that they keep their hearts open to God all along the way by talking to God continuously. This is not an accidental detail, and it's why we spend so much energy as a church just teaching each other how to pray. Victor is also going to need people who are looking out for him. There ought to be some small group in our lives where we can turn for care and support. I think a lot of people in United Church of Chapel Hill find that in their choir or in SCORE, or in another ministry that they take part in. We need to be connected with each other to persevere on this journey. And that's why the quality of our connections is a priority for us in our strategic planning in the next year. It's going to receive a lot of attention and consideration in the coming months. A third thing we're going to need to survive on this journey and to make it as comfortably as possible is a generous spirit. Somehow we have to keep our hearts open to each other. And I truly believe that takes practice. Martin Luther says that sin is just a soul curved in on itself. And that's what happens when we don't open ourselves to our neighbors with gestures of reaching out. And the only way that we can train ourselves to do that is to offer what we can to people whose lives are touching ours. Well, I think of Isaiah's words this morning. When you pass through the waters, I will be with you. And through the rivers, they will not overwhelm you. When you walk through the fire, you shall not be burned. It will not consume you. Isaiah speaks out of memory. He remembers where Israel has been, what it was like to flee from Egypt, what it was like to walk through the wilderness, how harrowing it was to cross the Red Sea and to cross the River Jordan. He was washed in those waters. We have been washed in those waters. They bless us for the journey ahead. Pastor David and I are just hoping to remind us all of our baptism this morning. You want to come join me? So we hope that worship today will be a reminder of your baptism, of your belovedness and blessedness before God, how we are blessed for the journey ahead. Remember your baptism. These waters are clean and pure. They are a blessing, not to change us or transform us, not to save us from danger or spare us from pain. They're a blessing. Remember your baptism. Remember your baptism. Yeah, I thought about a water gun. Okay, Bob, let's all rise and sing.